lived in Bishop, Texas from 1939 to 1949, coming in from Mexico. He became superintendent of the gas and recycling and Celanese plant at Bishop, Texas. He is now working with mental health and retardation in Kingsville. Mr. Bridgers will relate some of his experiences while superintendent of the gas and recycling and Celanese plant in Bishop. Mr. Bridgers' career has evolved around the oil industry. He will relate some of his experiences at the recycling plant in Bishop.
To Ray, my sister and my brother were born in Mexico, and as I say, I was born in El Paso, Texas, reared in Mexico. My education was acquired part in Mexico, Texas, and Venezuela. Venezuela obtained my 3 years as petroleum engineer and worked in the petroleum industry. Start of it was here in Texas in Miranda City. And that's been many, many years ago, way back in 1921, 26, during the boom days. And in Mexico, I worked for the Shell Oil Company approximately 15 years in Tampico, Mexico, until the year of 1938, when the Mexican government took over the properties, the oil properties, from the foreign interests. In doing so, why, practically all the foreigners were released from their positions, and other positions found for them worldwide by the foreign companies. I came out of Mexico in 1939, being one of the few Americans, because Shell International is Royal Dutch Shell Oil Company, and made our home here in Bishop in 1939, because I heard that there was some plants being built around there, gasoline plants they called them, or recycling plants. And yes, it was quite true. There was a huge construction going on near Bishop near 1939-1940, which was known as a recycling plant. That means to say that the fields were producing a saturated gas. This natural gas was wet. The wetness contained light hydrocarbons, gasoline, propanes. And the purpose of this huge plant was to extract all this moisture and, let us say, squeeze the gas and get the gasoline, separate these products, and you had gasoline and you had propanes. Well, it was very hard work at that time, and things were very hard around this part of the country. I would say perhaps all over the United States in 1939. We had graduate boys from A&I, side by side, including myself, with pick and shovel, digging ditches, anything to make a living at 25 cents an hour. And what I mean, there were long hours and it was hard work. Our hands were blistered, and there was always a long line of people waiting, hoping they could get a job. After the construction, I went in as an operator of the plant and eventually became superintendent of the Gulf Plains recycling plant. A very nice position, interesting work. And at that time, of course, World War II was on. We were all equipped with rifles, and we had to patrol the plant carefully, and most of us as operators, it was something that we, there was no demand, that is, the government didn't need us in the Army. We did more good making gasoline for the government than to join the Army. So we were not drafted in any way. We stayed right there making the gasoline day and night. But we were given arms, and we were all armed. There was about only a 6 person per shift operating this plant. And we were patrolling, and of course during the daytime there was more staff and it was much easier, but wee hours of the night it wasn't pleasant sitting around and walking around and wondering, well, who may come around. And we had one of these jokers there that liked to play jokes on us. He rigged up a kind of a strange flickering light that was way over there by the cooling tower. We could see from the office, and this little light would flicker on and off as though it was a flashlight. And he did this well prepared, well advanced during the daytime, and how he did all of this, we don't know, but when we came on midnight shift, well, during the hours of coffee break, 2 o'clock in the morning, I think it was, while we were sitting on the steps of the office, keeping our eyes open for any movement of any kind, and we, every now and again, we could see this flicker, and it looked like, actually, it looked like a flashlight, that somebody was back there with a flashlight. Well, here we sat with this powerful 30-30 rifle, and each one of us looking at each other, wondering, well, who's going over there to investigate? Well, we decided we all go together, but kind of scattered out. And of course, the fear was that we might shoot each other instead of shooting at the, whatever it was. Well, when we got there, it was nothing more than a well-rigged-up reflector type, but it had us kind of worried. It's just one of these incidents that keeps you alert and wondering what happens. Of course, at that time, the roads out to the plant, which was about 16 miles from Bishop, were very, very bad. And when it rained, it was real muddy road. It was sometimes we were late getting to work, and the other shift would just have to wait. But there were hard times, I can tell you. But the plant was finished and production went on. And in the meantime, the huge Celanese Corporation of America came into the picture, a petrochemical plant right there by Bishop. Excuse me. Many of the boys, operators, including myself, decided that we'd like to learn a little bit about petrochemical business and join the Celanese people, which was nothing more than making products out of the butanes produced by the recycling plant. At that time, it was called the Gulf Plains. It changed hands many times, and I think it's Chaplin Oil Company now.
What kind of products do they make? What kind of products do they make with
it? Well, the Celanese, of course, made all kinds of products. Acetone, formaldehyde, acetic acid. And since then, since I've been away, they have modernized tremendously and making, I don't know what, how many more new products, and making them, I would say, in a very modern way. But it turned out to be a huge plant, and everybody can see it. It's there, right there by Bishop. It created a tremendous amount of employment for people, which was very good for Bishop. Now, of course, the little town of Bishop at that time in 1939 was a little town, very small. And these cycling plants, these gasoline plants, which incidentally, there were 3 built. And then with Celanese coming in, why, it boosted the economy of Bishop quite a bit. Wonderful people, the people of Bishop. They treated everybody very, very well, and they certainly treated the Bridges family very well, who weren't known to anyone in Bishop. Coming out of Mexico, we were complete strangers. And we had very pleasant memories. There were some funny incidents that happened. I recall one especially, that one of the operators came into the office, a night operators, to report in the morning to the superintendent that he'd had a complaint from one of the farmers nearby that he wished that somebody would do something about the ghost that were destroying some of his crops. And this operator brought, that's what he said, that the farmer said that the ghosts were destroying his crops there, whatever he had planted. So upon investigation by the superintendent, it wasn't the ghost at all, no such thing as ghosts. He said that was the goats, G-O-A-T-S, goats, not ghosts. So, of course, everybody died laughing at that, but the operator was real serious, and he was scared himself when he heard that there was ghosts around there. He didn't much care to stay. So, from the Celanese changeover, from the gasoline plant to the Celanese, I stayed with them until 1949, and then I went to Venezuela, South America, where I rejoined the Royal Dutch Shell Oil Company and remained for 17 years. Now, I've been retired 6 years now, I'm back, and have been on the move ever since retirement. I was with Community Action. I am now with the Texas Department of Mental Health, Mental Retardation, helping out in any way and every way we possibly can for the afflicted people with their problems. And I just like to keep active. And of course, with my Spanish, well, I fit in pretty well, because I have to sometimes mix Spanish with English. I know Spanish better than English. And of course, I was speaking, sister and I were speaking Spanish before we ever spoke English, and before we ever spoke German. Mother is German, Daddy is English, and we spoke Spanish, we spoke German to Mother, we spoke English to Daddy, to the servant girls, of course, in Spanish, and we were taking French and Latin. So we knew all these languages. I don't know why, but now I'm lucky that I'm able to talk English and Spanish combined. But it's been a very interesting life, and now our home has been in Kingville ever since for about the last 25 years. We moved them from Bishop to Kingville in order to get the children into high school and to A&I. So they've all gone through A&I.
Well, at that time, they did have a high school at Bishop.
Oh, yes, absolutely. But we felt where we might as well get them into high school in Kingville from there right on in. And if we're going to settle in Kingville, might as well just settle right from the start.
Yes.
So from the grammar school into the
high
school.
Are there any other things that you remember while you were standing King Bishop? Were they any, did you experience any anti-German thingies because you were a German?
Not at all. In fact, with my Spanish, why, they considered me more Mexican-American than anything.
German.
In any language, any nationality. Because, well, they... and of course, I had no occasion to talk German to anybody, and
yes,
of course, with the feeling then how it was, well, I had to be real careful what language I was speaking.
Well, why were you, you mentioned that you were protecting the recycling plant with rifles. Did you really have a fear that somebody would...
Yes, we had a fear, because If you will remember, in World War II, they were getting pretty close to some of the coasts with submarines. And of course, the targets would have been excellent any place manufacturing gasoline for the war efforts. So a little place way out in the woods, let us say, or out in the fields like these gasoline plants making gasoline, it wouldn't take much to destroy it. See, so we had to keep a very close eye that no one got around there. We had to turn out practically all lights. We were walking around in the dark most of the time. So we'll come back to this little flickering light that I mentioned, and we sit and watch this flickering light that looked like a flashlight way back over there in the corner. And we just held tight to the rifle and wondered, well, now what? Who's going over there?
Do you remember any kind of any jokes in the oil industry? I mean, I don't mind if they're not really nice jokes. Just any jokes or any sayings?
Well, I remember a preacher, a colored church, that he was trying to explain hell to the congregation. Okay. And it wasn't easy. And he thought a while, and he said, well, brothers and sisters, I'll tell you, let me put it this way. He says, you know, he says, these white people, they're drilling and making holes and punching holes into the earth and taking out oil. Well, he says, you also know that this earth revolves. Well, you also must know, you're intelligent enough, that the earth must have an axle through it for it to revolve. Something's holding the earth. Well, now, whenever these white men take out all this oil, that's grease for the axle, and that axle is going to get hot, and that's going to be hell.
Oh boy, that was interesting. Where was it? Did you hear this? Where did you hear this?
Oh, this is way back in those days. Oh, yeah, when they had the circuit, the preaching circuit that you just come in tents into the little towns. Now these circuit preachers that you used to hit these little towns, just like the tent picture shows that you come, the small circuses that hit these small towns. Well, because, well, nobody could go to the big city, couldn't get there, so they'd hit these small places.
Well, could you tell us a little bit more about them? Did you go to many of them?
Well, we attended to a few. Of course, they're just like you see them now. I was just in Corpus here last week, and just right there before you enter Corpus, there's a camp there, and there's an evangelist meeting going on there. That's more or less just exactly how it was conducted then. But
how about the shows that you
The made? Shows, they used to have mostly puppet shows to attract puppet shows and bring the children, and if the children came, of course, Papa and Mama had to come, because the children couldn't come alone, so they had a good business head on them. They knew good and well that the children by themselves would come, so the Papa and Mama would come. Mm-hmm. And you may think, well, who's going to make any money showing puppets? Okay. Just the children. Well, it's not just the children. The Papa and Mama's going to bring the children, so that's two more adult tickets. So it was these circuit riders and circuit tents that made all these small little communities. And usually, of course, they would stay just long enough to figure they've just about got all the money they can get from the little community and leave. And of course, the little towns never did like them because they never left anything. They took everything with them, never bought anything, left anything.
There was no commerce. I mean, they didn't make anything.
Left the town, everybody spent money, they took it all out. Nothing left.
They didn't spend anything there, in other words.
Nothing, no.
I was going to ask you, when you were in Bishop in those 1939 and after, were there any Ku Klux Klan, the KKK.
No.
Were there any activities that you know of?
Not around there. We did hear of them, but as well as I remember, way back there, there didn't seem to be any activities whatsoever around there. Mm-hmm. I think this mostly hit the big cities, but not around there.
Yeah. They might have been already disbanded or...
I think so, yes, I think so. It was, as I say, perhaps everybody was so desperate for a job at that time that there was no time for any shenanigans belonging to anything.
Yes.
Finding work. They were real hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when you come out like I did from Mexico, was leaving a high position, managerial position, and then come to big ditches, that was quite something.
Yes, I can imagine. You couldn't find work over there afterwards? Because
no, you see, the idea, the Mexican government, had prepared years ahead to train their nationals to do exactly what the foreigner was able to do. Now the Mexican government paid a reasonable sum for the properties, not fully, but they did pay. Now we must realize that it's their country, and if they have the personnel that can do the same as we can do, well, why are we down there? They can do it. You see, Venezuela is all Venezuelans. They're all the technical people. Mexico, as well as Venezuela and all Latin American countries, they're turning out engineers, chemical, petroleum, by the dozens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where are they going to work? They have to work in their country. There's nothing for them over here.
I see. So
and as long as there's an American petroleum engineer over there, you're depriving a Venezuelan or a Mexican of that job, and it belongs to him.
I see. So I guess the Mexican government was smart then.
Yes. Now, the Venezuelan government says the following. The oil companies in Venezuela have to submit a written request for a foreign personnel for the following job. And if there isn't a Venezuelan that can do it, he may come into the country and work. But within a year, he has to have a Venezuelan trained to replace him. Fair enough.
Yes.
Otherwise, why put these young boys through school, graduate them in whatever they're going to master in, if there's nothing for them? Why, then just stop at high school, learn just to read and write, and that's all.
What were your, getting back to the Celanese, what were your duties there as superintendent?
Where?
What did you do?
At Celanese, the Celanese Corporation were divided in many units. Some of the units made certain products, which some of it passed to another unit, highly refined, and then it passed to another unit, and it was all a series of different processes in making these products.
I see.
To each one, they had their operators in shift and supervisors looking after them. Now, half of the plant, understand, is down. The old half where I used to work is completely down. That's the far half. All this end is new, brand new, and less of it, and is doing the same as all that put together over there. It's modernized. They haven't laid anybody off. They just moved them over to the other units.
I see. So it was.
But the operation of it is much cheaper.
How much were you producing at that time when you were there?
Well, I don't recall exactly how many tank cars per day of different products. Everything went by tank cars. It was all liquid. And horrible, stinking stuff. Where I was, when I went home of a night, I had to undress at night, leave my stinky clothes outside, shoes and everything. It smelled the high heaven. Formaldehyde. Now, formaldehyde, you know, is what they use to embalm you.
Yes.
Well, I should be very well embalmed by now with all that stuff. But my shoes and everybody's clothes were, at that time, they didn't know how to get all the smell out of all of this stuff. Now it's pleasant. You can walk through there. But those early days, and your eyes were burnt from the acetic acid, the fumes, but it stick to your clothes. Gosh, your wife says, you just go out there and undress out there and you shower out there and then come on in. And that was for everybody. But now it's changed. They've purified it so they're able to get that smell out. And it's much better. So it's taken all these years, but nevertheless, well, they've done a good job.
You have today of all days. I forgot to wear my watch. We start about what, 2 o'clock on the dot.
Mm-hmm.
You still have a few more minutes. Yeah. You want anything else to say? I turned it off.
Of course, I have been asked many times, having been 32 years in foreign service, what did I think of foreign service? Lastly, once you get into foreign service, it is wonderful for many reasons. Security. There isn't any trouble that you're going to get fired today or next year. You're just there until you're retired. If they don't need you there, they'll transfer you somewhere else. Royal Dutch Shell is worldwide. If they don't need you in Venezuela, they'll need you in Africa or somewhere. But there's always a job for you. It's very pleasant work. The social life is very nice because all functions, anything going on, it's all dress affair, tuxedo, and it's a very pleasant life. And you're somebody. Huh? And promotions are good. Increases in salary are good. Free medical. Vacations, you work 3 years, you get 5 months fully paid vacation. You go any place in the world, but you get then 2 weeks every year in between the 3 year. But when the 3 years up, then you get 5 months vacation fully paid. So you can go anywhere you want to. If your destination is London, go to London, China, anywhere you want. Everything paid. Schooling for children. They'll give you an allowance to send your children out of Venezuela to the States or Canada or Europe. So there has many factors that you don't have up here. Retirement is excellent. You almost get 75% of your salary when you finish. For the rest of your life. And if you pass away, half of that, 50% will remain for the rest of life for your wife.
How can they afford all that?
So it has its wonderful points in foreign service. And of course, if you're in it like I was 32 years, well, naturally I missed the place. And for me, well, my heart is in Latin American countries. I make my trips to Mexico. I just got back from Mexico, nice vacation. I go by car, different places. I bypass the big cities. I hit the small communities, the small towns. I love the churches. I like to go to their churches and just spend hours in there praying and looking. It's quiet and it's nice. They're very faithful to their church in Latin American countries. So, my life has been quite interesting. It's all been in the petroleum industry since I started roughnecking in Miranda City, worked myself up to a driller, brought in a well that caught fire in Cisco, Texas. I was in the hospital 3 months, and my clothes were, I was a burning torch. The well came in unexpected, but I lived through it, and they talk about drugs. I was on morphine 3 months, almost the full 3 months. And they gave it to me in such strong doses because they didn't expect me to live. And then they decided I was going to live, and then they started cutting it off. And that was worse than the burns. But I've never had a desire for this stuff.
Well,
it's amazing what punishment the body can take.